podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes, and today I'm joined by Kevin Graham and Brian Degnan. I'm sitting in for Colin Watt today. Colin is kind of busy this afternoon, but he will be back. Don't worry about it. He's still an important part of the Axom team. Kevin Graham, we're just going to dive right into the biggest story in the world of Celtic. The boy Higgins, Bernard Higgins. And I think the biggest issue that we have at the moment is this is the worst possible time for the board to make such a foolish decision as to employ this individual in a senior position at the club, because we are in a scenario where things are going well on the park. We always go on about this Holy Trinity. The fans have bought into Ange. We're liking what we see. We're getting the results. We're still in Europe. We're in a League Cup final. We're going to claw back the 4 points, hopefully, that we're chasing in the league. Yet, in the background, the board still don't get it. They still don't get it because the very fact that they're even considering this appointment shows that they're far removed from the Celtic support. And so much so that at the last count, I was just having a look there, there were 249 signatories on the letter that's been prepared to the CEO, Michael Nicholson, opposing the imminent arrival of Bernard Higgins at Celtic Football Club. Now, the first thing I would say is, how will the board, do you think, Kevin, with your dealings that you've had with the board over the years, how will they react to this action by the Celtic fan base? Because, I mean, tens of thousands of Celtic fans are represented in that letter.
I'll comment first on that till later. Well done to everybody who organised it. And it's utterly beautiful to see so many sections of the Celtic support come together and support against this appointment. And when you look at it, Paul, you says 249, and it's all supporters groups, it's all podcasts, it's all fan media, it's all individual supporters clubs. I mean, the list of that supporters clubs like Portland, when you just read all the names of those supporters club, that's history right there. That's millions and millions of pounds of investment every season into Celtic Football Club, who are coming together to say we do not want Bernard Higgins in the club. Now, what will the board do? I think they'll keep silent. I really do think they'll keep silent, and they won't hope it will go away, but there's two things that they can do. They can either come out and say, right, we're not appointing Bernard Higgins, or they will just keep silent and nobody will get appointed into this role. They won't say that they're not appointing them. They won't say that they're going to look at other options. One day in 6 months' time, somebody will be appointed to that role very, very quietly without much fuss, hopefully. Or they'll just go full on, declare war on the Celtic support on the 5th of January. But we won't get, they won't react to this letter. They won't react at all to this letter. The same way that they never reacted to the protest and the silent protest in the stadium or the tennis ball protests at Dens Park. The board would have hoped that the tennis ball protests at Dens Park would have put a lot of the rank and file off. They would have said, that's a misstep by the Green Brigade, because it was the Green Brigade that organised it. Instead, it's went the other way. That would have caught them by surprise, mm-hmm. but they will be complete and utterly silent. Because that's what they do.
That you're right, that is what they do. They just ignore it, Kevin. And then things happen and they don't communicate. In the aftermath of things like Dominic Mackay leaving the club, or Gordon Strachan being brought in an advisory role, or there being a review, the results of which we've never seen to this day. So they do have a habit of just, you know, forgetting that the fans need to be updated and communicated with. If they do remain silent, and it's likely that they will, Brian, what does that say to the Celtic fans who have, you know, signed that, or someone has signed it on their behalf? So the supporters club could be representing tens, dozens, hundreds of individual Celtic fans. I mean, Axom signed the letter and we represent the Axom members, of which there are 18 in total. And a lot of the people who listen in agree with that. You know, you could see that on the response to the tweets yesterday. And then the 249 signatories will increase, because you see other podcasts coming on saying, listen, we weren't engaging with you, we didn't know this was happening, but stick our name on it. So that's growing by the day. If they do remain silent, as Kevin suggests, and I think they will, what does that say to all those tens of thousands of fans represented in that letter?
Well, what it does is it just sort of reaffirms the complete disconnect from board to fan. You know, we saw it last season when people were protesting about Neil Lennon and members of the board and stuff like that. We saw it at the start of this season, as Kevin alluded to, with the tennis balls and the sort of half hour of silence. And the fact is, the board, I kind of feel like what they'll do is, I think the most realistic thing they'll do is, I don't think they'll go ahead with Higgins, because I think even with that hubristic nature they've got to understand that's a disaster. That's a massive, massive, massive PR on goal. From a business perspective, it could cost them money. It's just controversy they don't need when the season's picking up and going well. So I think sensible heads will probably prevail, but I don't think they'll acknowledge it, as Kev says, because I don't think they want the fans to think that they're winning. I think that's the pettiness in their attitude. Well, you know, the fans want this and you're demanding it. Well, we can't give them it because they're winning. And I think that's really poor. The easiest thing in the world would be for them to release a statement and say, thanks everyone for the engagement. We've listened to you. We're on board. We've rethought the position and we're going in a different direction. We take your views on board and we thank you for the input. And then people go, brilliant, they are listening. And it's easy, dead simple. One statement on their website could get the fans on board, get rid of Higgins, and then we move on. But I just think that they don't have that. I think they'll begrudgingly not hire him, but I don't think they'll actually admit. Or what they might even do is just totally deny he was ever in the frame and say, oh, it's just rumours, we had no intention of hiring him, if they're asked about it. Mm. We've saw that they've been disingenuous, and you mentioned Don Mackay, you know, or personal issues, and then we found out it wasn't personal issues. They actually contradicted it in a later statement. So there is a real disregard for the feelings of the supporters. But even with that disregard, I just think hiring Higgins would be a step too far.
This is a big thing. There's a lot of talk at the moment, and it's something, again, Kevin has spoken about on a Celtic State of Mind over the last 4.5 years, representation of the fans on the board. This isn't a case of every decision that's made at Celtic, we're all going to come together and disagree and send a letter. This is different. You know, this is a bold, bold move. And Kevin was talking there about bringing that amount of people together. That's difficult. I mean, about the only thing that brings that amount of Celtic fans together is to actually go and watch the game. Because, you know, even the three guys on this broadcast today won't agree on everything in relation to Celtic, which is part of the fun. But some of the fundamental things that people disagree on, you see it constantly. There's affiliations, there's associations, there's the trust, there's various different groups. And they don't all necessarily have the same narrative when speaking about Celtic. This is completely different because this is all the big hitting groups, associations, affiliations coming together as one and saying, no, you've got this miles off. You're miles off with this decision. If they don't deny it, though, Kev, then the information that's been leaked, and you spoke about this last week, they're confirming. If they don't come out and say, listen, this individual either is or isn't a candidate for this role, they're basically confirming that he is. Because, as you say, it's been deliberately leaked by someone knowing that this kind of reaction could be had by, you know, whispering someone once someone's ear, this is the plans for the club. Now, we're talking about the Dominic Mackay situation. This is a board who told us that Dominic Mackay was at the forefront of appointing Ange Postecoglou. But if you listen to the AGM last week, they've contradicted themselves again with that because Peter Lovell was involved and instrumental in appointing Ange Postecoglou. And it's got to that point where, yes, we have opened up with this because it's the biggest story this week in the world of Celtic. But what's happening in the meantime is that Ange Postecoglou in the football is almost separated from that, Kev, because he is building a side, he is getting the backing of the fans. And I think it's more important than ever that we have some kind of resolution to this particular issue. Going into a cup final, going into a very important derby, they're all important, but a very important derby game on the 2nd of January where, you know, at that point, if it is still 4 points, we're going to, you know, need a very, very important win that day. We're going into a transfer window that is the most important transfer window, I would say, in the last decade, even more important than the one in the pre-season that we've just witnessed. So with all that said, Kevin, I still get the feeling that their whole intention was to go toe-to-toe with certain fan groups, and in particular the Green Brigade. And that is one of the reasons why they want to appoint this individual. And I still have the view that they are still going to go ahead and appoint that individual. We've seen them digging their heels in before, after the Ross County game, Kev. And I think that the reason they didn't act at that point was because the fans protested. And I'm not blaming the fans, by the way. I'm blaming the board. They changed their mind. I don't think they ever want to bow down to the needs and wants of the Celtic fans or the demands of the Celtic fans. And I think they're still going to go ahead with this, Kev. So my next question is, if they do, what happens next?
If they do go ahead with it, then we can't go, you mentioned going toe-to-toe, we can't go toe-to-toe with Dermot Desmond because we haven't got £40 million to buy him out. The only way that we can do it, I mentioned in the comments yesterday, the Fabian strategy, which is starve them, which is then if they go ahead with this appointment, then you starve them of what they actually see us as a cash cow. You start cutting off income streams. Then they will start engaging with the support. We saw it when we had the banners of shame under Ronnie Dyler, up the top of the North Stand. I was involved in fan activism at that point. I was heavily involved in one of the supporters groups at that point, and Celtic were never off the phone to us, trying to get people into the stadium. As soon as people stop going to the stadium and their income streams drop, that's when they start engaging. And if they do appoint Higgins, if they really do, then the only option that the supporters have actually got is to start withdrawing their financial support. How difficult that is. I mean, I was involved in Celtic supporters groups for 10 years, and I've never seen anything unite the support like the Bernard Higgins thing. Never. Even like what I would call socialist principles, which would appeal to the nature of Celtic support, like £20 tickets, that gets shot down. I've never seen so many demographics of the Celtic support come together under one banner against one thing. They all came together under against the Offensive Behaviour Act. But even then, there were some naysayers and that. But this is massive. This is absolutely massive.
It is. It's absolutely huge. And on a Celtic State of Mind, on the bulletin at least, we talk about the topical subjects involving our football team. And that could be a Christmas advert in one breath, and it could be Bernard Higgins in another. So it's not doom and gloom, but it has to be discussed, Brian. And Kevin, again, you know, has spoken about this long and hard for a long, long time on a Celtic State of Mind. I remember back in the days, Celtic were playing Dundee, 1993, I think. It was a boycotted game, Kev. Mm-hmm. And my dad and I were going to that game. And I'm pretty sure, was that the game that there was a Wolf Tones gig on at the Barrowlands after it? I think there might have been. And I went to the game. I never boycotted a Celtic game. So looking back at that period, I wanted change. I did want change at Celtic. I did want the board to be toppled. I think Fergus McCann is an absolute hero. And, you know, some kind of lasting monument. Some people say the lasting monument is Celtic Park itself, but some lasting monument should definitely at some point be erected at Celtic Park in his memory and what he did for Celtic. And you know, I always look back on that moment as the rebirth of Celtic. You know, Brother Walfred responsible for the birth of Celtic, Jock Stein making us a European force, and of course, Fergus McCann, the rebirth of Celtic. So, you know, I look back on it fondly. And at the time, reading the pages of the Not the View fanzine, I was well behind the movements. But as a young kid at that stage, I just wanted to go and watch my team. So, you know, the boycotted games, I still went to the games, not because I was against it. I just found it very difficult. There was a difficulty in me not going to watch my football club, Kev. And I think that there's a lot of people probably feeling the same way when it comes to withdrawing anything, if it ever comes to that. So people are going to be torn with this kind of decision, Brian. And that's the big dilemma, isn't it?
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox Internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because if you withdraw support for the team, it might affect the team. And that's not what you want at all, because as you rightly said, Paul, the things we're discussing, Higgins and the board, etc., they are separate for the football and they need to be discussed and considered separately, because the football on the park is good and Andrew's doing a great job and the players are buying in. So there's so much to be positive about on the park. But you have to talk about these things. And the fear is, I mean, look, the reason I'm wearing my cap today is because I'm always reliably informed of my missies that look like an Ed or a Chavis, she calls it. And if I went to a game looking like this, under Higgins' watch, would I be blacklisted or put on a watch list or considered a hooligan? So, you know, we talk about how it may affect the fans, but there's a physical aspect to that as well. As would the policing change at Celtic Park in terms of what's allowed? Is this an attempt by the board to sort of cleanse the brand of any sort of ultras element and make it very sort of PG-13, family friendly Celtic Park club for all? And it feels like the board are going in this very corporate, streamlined, sort of branded direction. And Higgins might be what they see as the clear of what's perceived as the ruffians, which is ridiculous. But that's, I think, the real danger of the effect. And as you say, I agree with Kev, I think the way it affects any business, or the way any business is affected at corporate level, is if business is suffering, right? Which means the financials. But as you say, what makes us all happy and what unites us as much as our protest against Higgins is their love for Celtic and our desire to watch the team and see them in the park, especially when it's such a good moment. So there's no easy answer.
the other thing that what you've got to, what you said there, Brian, was like, you're saying that it's a target, a certain section of the support. Now, this is a certain section of the support which they'll take credit from with displays like the Betty Old display on Saturday at Hampden, the video which shows they've done the display inside Celtic Park. They actually got all the material and they have got a cupboard and all of that inside Celtic Park. And what you've got to remember as well is Celtic Football Club signed a petition against the Offensive Behaviour Act. They signed a petition against Bernard Higgins, the thing that he was promoting. So where does this... There's something just doesn't fit here. And Celtic, well, is their right? It could be their legal right. It could be legal reasons. We'll sit in silence here. But Celtic have got to actually try and have a balancing act here between you can't take credit for the Green Brigade when they do something good, then try to appoint somebody who tried to completely destroy the culture of the Green Brigade as well. And especially when you put your name to an official document saying you were against the Offensive Behaviour Act. You just can't do that. It's mixed messages. Paul, you mentioned that they says it was personal reasons for Don Mackay. Then they says it wasn't personal reasons. If you're going to be a good liar, you need to remember what lies that you actually tell.
You're spot on. Yes, so that's very funny. Relevant. Now, in relation to something that Brian said there, I always reiterate the criminalisation aspect of it. There is no differentiation in the minds of the Police Scotland between someone who's an ultra and someone who's a hooligan. That's the issue. They see all ultras as hooligans. That's Police Scotland's mantra. So when the focus group was established and when the Offensive Behaviour Act was rolled out, basically they were going in, studs up, and they were taking out not just people who were part of ultra groups for all the wrong reasons, but any associates of those people. So as Brian said there, if you were dressed in a certain way, drinking in a certain pub with a certain person, before you know it, you are on a police database, an intelligence database. You are associating with a risk fan, a risk group. Your picture is being circulated all over the country. And, you know, that for me is a massive invasion of your right as a football fan to go to a game and watch a game of football. And that's exactly what that act did. And Bernard Higgins was at the forefront of that because in his mind, we were the enemy. And if we bring him in, we're sleeping with the enemy. It's as simple as that. If he's brought into Celtic Football Club, we are sleeping with the enemy. And the big thing for me as well, we see it so many times where big influential decision makers in a company, in a business, or in a football club who are so far removed from reality, but they're making the decisions that affect the people that actually buy the product, support the football club. And it's so obvious. I mean, the disconnect is so obvious to everybody else except a tiny group of people with all the power at Celtic Park. If it does happen, Kev, and I've said this a couple of times, do you see this as really being the straw that breaks the camel's back? Is this the beginning of some real tangible change at Celtic? We need to get rid of some of these board members.
Again, it's very difficult because none of us are sitting here with £40 million in our back pocket to go and buy out the major shareholder. And that's the difficulty that we've got here. And unless the major shareholder, or if he's going to put his son in charge and his son decides he wants to take his inheritance down a different route, I can't see anything changing apart from, like, I'm getting bought out. I really can't. Or understand people don't want to boycott, don't want to stop buying merchandise, don't want to stop buying season tickets. But unfortunately, that is the only thing that counts to the Celtic PLC. It's getting money through the door. And that I'll go back to the fans forum earlier on this season when we were talking about maybe giving discounts to people who bought season tickets last season, never got in, and just saying, look, some people might need discounts here for them to buy their season ticket this year. Some people might be struggling. And in that fans forum, Brian Wilson basically was like a clap and seal when the first commenter actually says, I've got my money here for 6 season tickets. Please just take my money.
That's what I like to hear is exact words.
That was, That's what I like to hear, was his exact words, with a big grin across his face, like a big seal getting a fish thrown at him. It was horrible. Absolutely
it was
horrible.
Terrible. Well, in one moment, Kev, that showed you the distance between the ordinary fan and the Celtic board. And in one instance, that was the glaring example. And I don't know if these things are recorded. I certainly don't think we were given recording access when we were in that forum, Kev, but I'm not sure if they are recording. But that was the moment where you're looking at thinking, this is a massive concern. Because you asked them to look out the window, didn't you, Kev?
I did.
At Brother Walfred sitting outside, and what would he do? What are the origins of this football club? And coming in from Facebook, the correlation between the board and the fans is non-existent. They fly in the face of the statement by Jockstein, football without fans is nothing. Absolutely. And, you know, there comes a point where they need to actually look at the words. It's not just a banner. It's not just merch. It's not just a quote on a wall. Look at the words and know their meaning. And the Celtic board don't understand the meaning of those words, and that's the problem. They don't understand us as Celtic fans. They've never had to save up for a season ticket. They've never had to go and get two paper rounds to save up for a season ticket as a 15-year-old. And that kind of thing, I think, their entry level into this football club is the boardroom. It's not on the terracing, and that's a massive issue. So in terms of fan representation, Kev, again, it's something that you've looked into. You've been at various meetings. You've been in various forums over the years. At a club like Celtic, does it work?
It's never been... I mean, apart from the German clubs, which it's in legislation there, it's never been done at a club at the size of Celtic. Now, some may actually say that Rangers have got some element of fan representation with Club 1872 with their offices at the top and Ibrox, and some of the decisions that the Rangers hierarchy actually make seem to be come straight from that mental ring of Club 1872. They seem to be fan-based, and the appeal to the lowest common denominator. I don't know if it would work at Celtic. Celtic fans could fight over a big pen at times. I mean, you just need to have a look at the start of the season with fans. I mean, imagine if you had fans representation that, but oh, it's no working, it's this and that. We need to spend £20 million. I don't know if it'll work. You look at Motherwell, it works very well at clubs like Motherwell. Even Hearts, it seems to be doing okay at Hearts. At Celtic, I don't know. I really can't answer that question. And it's a question that I've considered for years and years, if fan representation would work. The way that they're set up at the moment with a PLC, it's probably not, because any fan representation on the board would need to sign a non-disclosure agreement of what happens at the meetings. So it's in their current setup, it wouldn't work. What I would really, really like to see, the most simple option is Ross Desmond comes in and actually takes an interest and has got a different mindset for his dad.
An interest, right. Absolutely. There's a good point coming through before I come to you. Brian Van comes in on YouTube to say Desmond is holding his shares like a 1 in a million golden ticket just in case Celtic ever get to the Premier League. Yes, absolutely. That's it. I mean, I spoke before to a major shareholder at Celtic who spoke about the impact of the club leaving Scottish football on an individual basis to anyone who has a large investment in the club. And I mean, it's astronomical. It's life-changing, isn't it? And he does still speak about Celtic leaving the confines of Scottish football at some stage, be that the EPL. Some people think that's a non-starter, or elsewhere. The football landscape has changed dramatically. We spoke about it all the way through the pandemic. But in terms of fan representation on that board, it's a subject that is ripe at the moment. Brian, what's your thoughts on it at a club the size of Celtic?
So I kind of echo Kev's sentiments, to be honest. I'm not sure. It depends what the representation is. If it's just to give a voice in the room and give an opinion for your fans' perspective, the board are not going to listen anyway, because they're not listening at the moment. So in its current state, I don't think it would work. And again, as Kev says, with being a PLC, you're not going to get the access you need anyway. So I think, in principle, having some sort of fan representation would be a good idea. I just don't think it's something that's current state. But fundamentally, it would be good because it helped the disconnect. I spoke before on here about the need for diversity at board level. That's not just race, gender. It has to be changed. There has to be a rotation every 45 years. That kind of a business the size of Celtics at board level, just for new ideas, for new processes, stuff like that. You don't have QR codes at the gates yet. You just scan your pass, still print tickets and stuff like that. It's so much antiquated stuff that a new perspective could change things like that, and that snowballs. So I think, first of all, before we consider fan representation, we need to get proper diversity of thought and new ideas into the board.
Diversity of thought, absolutely. We've described them, Kevin, as nodding dogs at times, you know. They all just think that everything they say and do is right. They're all patting on each other on the back. But meanwhile, Kev, I interrupted you there.
No, you're fine. I mean, you always hoped that when I was in meetings with Celtic, you always hoped, like, your opinions or your members' opinions, because you were there representing your members, and our members were over 3,000 season ticket holders, guys who went up and down the country everywhere to Europe and that. But you just knew that, like, JP would take it back to Peter Law and it would get filed. There's the minutes of that meeting, Peter. Aye, right.
It gets filed beside Benitez's CV.
Aye, it gets filed in that drawer that nobody's ever looks at, eh? And I do know that there has been meetings over the last couple of weeks with Michael Nicholson as well, where he was told to his face that the all the groups wouldn't work with Bernard Higgins as well. Whether Michael's a different cut from the different cloth and what Peter was and is maybe is going to be more on the side of the fans, we don't know. That remains to be seen. But the way that he's got the job, that's no offence to Michael, but the way that he's got the job doesn't look good for an outsider looking in.
No, absolutely not. We will talk a wee bit about football as well, by the way. We're in a cup final. There's a big game on Thursday night, of course. I want to start off the football discussion by talking about James Forrest, because, again, over the periods or the last couple of seasons with Scott Brown, I was looking at the fact that he was breaking into this 500 club, which is, it's only 12 strong players, Celtic players, who have played 500 or more competitive games for the club. There's only 12 players in that list. That's quite incredible. And one of them now is Scott Brown, who I think, off the top of my head, made 618 appearances for Celtic. Incredible when you think about it. I mean, he didn't make his debut for Celtic at 17, so it was an amazing achievement. And then I was looking at the squad and I thought to myself, well, we've got Jamesy Forrest in there and Callum McGregor. McGregor's into his 300s and Forrest is into his 400s. He's been out injured. He's 30 years of age, 423 appearances, 96 goals and 96 assists as well. It looks as though he will be the next inductee into the 500 club. As I say, there's only a dozen in there at the moment. I'm looking at his introduction and the timing of that, Kev. And I actually think that he's going to be pivotal, not to a turnaround. I think there has already been a turnaround, but now to move it to the next level, try and get on top of this league. He's been over this time and time again. I said during the week there, the only season, other than his breakthrough season where he only played two games, where he didn't win a trophy was last season. This is a winner. He doesn't know how to finish second. How important is he going to be in the running for Ange?
He is going to be extremely important, and he doesn't do the shouting. He just does his job on the pitch, and that he's quiet. And maybe that's why some people, and we can't rewrite history here, because when Brendan Rodgers came in, he was in the last 6 months of his contract, and everybody wouldn't have been that disappointed if he hadn't left at that point, because his form had dropped right off a cliff. But now,
mobile phone companies say they offer home internet, but if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox.
Cox Internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for.
Based on Cox analysis of Ookla Speedtest Intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
He's going to be massive for Ange Postecoglou in the next couple of months. He gives Abada competition as well. He also gives Abada the chance to go and reset. Mm. We keep on saying he's 20, he's moved into a new country. He's had that sort of new signing bounce where he was working on adrenaline. Now it's got a bit tougher for him, the way that teams are setting up against him. But now we've got Forrest back. That gives defences, other opposition managers, a different problem now, because Forrest is very good at cutting inside, as his goal at the weekend actually shown. He's experienced in this league. Ange Postecoglou is going to rely on him quite a bit, him and Callum McGregor. But as a Celtic support, when are we going to start appreciating James Forrest? When are we actually going to start loving this wee fella for what he's done for us? He's as decorated as a Christmas tree in George Square, man.
What are we on? 19? Are we on 19 trophies?
19 trophies we're on, eh? Have we ever had a song for him? I mean, he's been there since he's been 17, but he's always seemed to be one of these guys that large swathes of the support have never took to. And I find that unusual. I find that weird. I find that unusual where a player who's going to get 500 games for us is going to get a testimonial and is going to win numerous more trophies going forward. I do find that weird.
I think, again, off the top of my head, 9 leagues, 5 Scottish Cups, 5 League Cups.
Right.
Unbelievable records. Monty, welcome back to the show. Monty, you're commenting on YouTube. James Forrest. His record at Celtic in terms of assists, goals and trophies won is incredible. Fantastic contribution. Brian, what is it about players coming through the ranks that sometimes get it a wee bit harder? I mean, people going about Paddy Roberts like he was the Messiah. We've got a player in James Forrest here who's going to be 500 appearances, 50 caps for his country, 20-odd trophies, testimonial, decorated Celt. Yet, sometimes he still gets a hard time.
Do you know what? I think it's actually because, as Kevin alluded to, he is so quiet and unassuming, and he kind of goes about his business, and he doesn't cheerlead, he doesn't, you know, thump the badge, he doesn't go on about his love for Celtic. He just goes about his business. He's very shy, he's very quiet, and I think at times, you know, I think under Ronnie Dyla he was struggling a lot, as you say, before Rodgers came in, and I think that just in people's heads, he's never going to be good enough. I think he's an excellent player. It's funny, when you ever talk about James Forrest, I always think about my mum, because she absolutely loves him. She loves him because he looks like a wee boy and he's got a wee funny run. That's what she says.
Shooters was his nickname in his early years, wasn't it?
Shooters. He's just loads of pace in the neck. But I just, I love him. I think he's a great player. And I think that he's like a new signing. I know we'll probably talk about new signings in January, but he is like a new signing. I think he'll galvanise other players as well. I think you're right about Abada, Kev. I think he needs a wee rest. I would actually like to see Forrest out left and Jota out right, just for a wee run to see how that dynamic works, just to change it up. Mm-hmm. Especially if we're talking about giving defenders something different to think about. Because you kind of know, as good as Jota is, what you're getting, but switching him out right, James out left, or vice versa. And the other aspect of Forrest's game that I think is really important, especially given the way we play, is how hard he works. You know, he's always tracking back, he's always picking up a man, and I think he's a lot stronger than people give him credit for. And I think, actually, he's losing a wee bit of pace as he gets older. I never had any pace, but as most of us do. But what he's doing is his positioning is getting better. You can see that for the goal against St Johnstone. He knew exactly where to be. He knows how to use his body, how to make space for others, and I think that's an aspect of his game that's underrated as well, as the movement, because he's always opening up gaps for people. And I think maybe because he's on the limelight, or watch a poser. Even his celebrations kind of bland, isn't it? You know what I mean? There's something about him, he's just so quiet and you would forget he's there, but you can't forget his contribution because it's been exceptional and he should be, and I think he will be remembered as a modern day legend. I really do.
It is incredible when you look at the group of players who have got a huge amount of experience over the 9-in-a-row period. Obviously, Brown has left, and I always felt that Tierney would be in there, but he went to pastures new. Forrest, like a lot of players, Kev, it's one of these things, once you move kind of post-30, you've got to adapt your game. If a lot of your game's about the speed, and you've seen it over the years with footballers, if they can't adapt, then often they're a far lesser player. And I don't just mean on the wing. I mean, Ryan Giggs, a lot of his attributes was down to his speed, the way he was able to dribble up. But he completely changed his game and was able to play into his 40s. Other players, when they lost that yard, the pace, they were never the same player. Michael Owen, even our very own Mark Burchill, too many injuries caught up with them. They lost the pace and that was it, really. Forrest, I think, has it in them to adapt so that the pace isn't such an issue. And I think when you're looking at the likes of Abada, I don't think he gets a hard time, and rightly so, he shouldn't get a hard time. But he's a winger. James Forrest is on the wing. And you know, by virtue of that, his form is going to be up and down. So, you know, even between now and the end of the season, he's going to have wee dips. But I just think what he brings in terms of his presence, his influence, his experience, and of course, you know, he loves a winner and he loves a goal in Europe. I wouldn't bet against him scoring on Thursday night as well. Kev, what do you think it is? Because obviously the most recent example of it has been, to a lesser degree, Stephen Welsh, but I think Tony Ralston is the best example of a young player coming through and, you know, they're on a short leash when it comes to criticism, aren't they?
They are, and I do find that we seem to give leeway to foreign signings, more leeway to foreign signings than to young guys who make the step up from our own academy. And when you think back when Forrest broke into the team as a 17-year-old, he was a bit up or down. I've already said that last 6 months of his contract under Rodgers turned him into an elite player. And we've got a lot to find. There's a Brendan Rodgers klaxon at 38 minutes for anybody that had that in the betting. So Rodgers turned Forrest, McGregor into elite players, and that's the players we're now seeing. And Scott Brown. Let's not forget Scott Brown's form before Rodgers came in as well. And I think before that, those who have been watching Forrest for 10 years or however long it is, we remember that inconsistency. But what you rightly say, Paul, is right. He is a winger. Wingers are going to have poor games. Wingers are going to be in and out of games. For me, I've always thought Forrest could play through the middle as well. And he's been used there a couple of times. He reminded me a bit of Theo Walcott, that he could be quite devastating through the middle because he can finish. He has got a decent finish. You haven't seen him miss many ones-on-ones than sometimes winger. I'll go back to Frimpong. Frimpong was a winger, but couldn't he score. His finishing was terrible. Forrest's finishing has always been good. When Forrest breaks into that box on a one-on-one with a goalkeeper, you expect him to score. You do. There's nothing going through your head to say that he's going to hit the goalkeeper with that ball. I love young players coming through the academy, and that's why I'll always give them all the time in the world. Like Ralston, like Wells, I want to see them getting opportunities because sometimes we just ignore what's on our doorstep and just go, they're no good enough. They've only came through our academy. Oh, he was on loan at Morton, man. He was on loan at Morton. That means that he can't be good. He was on loan at Tranmere. But this boy's came from the Israeli First Division. He must be far better. Maybe that we don't know. It's the same with young players for other teams. The Aberdeen right back, can't remember his name, that everybody's raving about, he's probably going to end up going down to England. I mean, if Stephen Welsh was playing for Aberdeen and was getting 50, 60 games for Aberdeen, we would be going, he's a great player. He's better than what's in our academy. We just didn't give our academy boys a chance. And then I'm including us guys on the terrace and we're at as well. We do not give young Scottish talent a chance And they do need a chance to develop, a chance to breathe, a chance to actually grow into the side. But sometimes we just want instant success. And you're never going to get that with young players, no matter where they come from.
Yeah, because they're learning on the job. I mean, Calvin Ramsey, that's the boy at Aberdeen, Kev. Right. And you're right, it's like Josh Doig at Hibs. You know, they have a decent season and all of a sudden we're getting quoted £3 and £4 million to buy them. Yeah, you look at the performances and the contribution of Tony Ralston this season. Has Doig or Ramsey been better than Ralston this season? I don't think so, you know. And over a period of games, and in Europe as well, and now on an international level, you mentioned loans to Tranmere. One of our goalies is currently on loan at Tranmere, Ross Doohan, 23 years of age. It's his sixth loan deal. He's made 103 appearances at senior level, not one single appearance for Celtic. But it leads me into the situation with the goalies. I've been reading over the last week that apparently Scott Bain is set to sign a new deal. So it looks as though he is the backup to Joe Hart. We've spoken about our concerns around maybe Joe Hart getting injured or suspended. Going into Thursday night, if we didn't have Joe Hart in goals, I wouldn't be that confident. I'm going to be totally honest with you. Barkas is obviously going to leave the building at some stage. And what are the other options? Well, you've got Connor Hazard, who made a rare appearance last night for the Celtic B team, the Colts, in the Glasgow Cup. They were playing Clyde. It was one each, and he was sent off for bringing David Goodwillie down. So that was a good return to form for Connor Hazard. Are we happy that we're going to be running with Scott Bain as Joe Hart's backup? I'll come to you first, Brian. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it was interesting. Last time Al Morrison was on, always love his input. I always think he's very clever, and he was talking about Bain and how actually statistically he's not much different from Joe Hart in terms of, you know, pass percentages, saves made, etc. But there's the unquantifiable thing that a guy like Joe Hart brings that Scott Bain doesn't. Scott Bain, for me, doesn't inspire any confidence. He doesn't look like he controls his back line. I don't think he's big enough to intimidate strikers or you know, at corners and stuff like that. So I don't think he's good enough. I wouldn't be confident with him in goals. And I know that's probably harsh on the guy because I don't think his record's that bad. But for me, he's no the answer. Maybe his cover, I suppose. But I would have a real fear if Joe Hart went injured. And the thing about it is, well, you've got to do a bit of forward planning, right? So if you're looking at being a backup keeper, it should be not just in case Joe Hart gets injured. It should be who's going to be his replacement longer term. You know, we should be looking a bit further ahead and saying, let's get someone now, let learn off Joe Hart and then eventually replace him. So I think we should be doing a bit more like that for the goalkeeper situation. Barkas, hopefully, you know, he'll be off. Unless Ange plays in midfield, maybe, for a change. He fancies himself there. Hazard doesn't seem to have a future under Ange. And the boy Doohan, I'd like to see him maybe given a chance. I've not seen much of him, I've got to be honest. But maybe it just doesn't inspire any confidence in me. And I don't think it inspires confidence or fear in teammates or opponents.
Well, the big thing for me, again, we've been quite critical at times when it comes to Joe Hart. I don't know if it's down to him or down to the style where he's expected to play it from the back. There was another couple of occasions against St Johnstone, 96-minute heart and mouth moments. What we have in Doohan and Hazard are two goalkeepers who are 23 years of age. Doohan's played a lot of football elsewhere. Hazard's got an international career at Northern Ireland. But I just have this feeling, particularly with Hazard having been in the team last season, if they were going to do it, it would have been done before now. And perhaps we're now looking at Toby Olawoyemi, who we bought from Spurs Youth and who's now broken into the under-19 squad for England, as maybe the long-term backup stroke first-choice goalkeeper. And maybe Scott Bain's just a stopgap, Kev. Would you be happy with that, though? Because, I mean, all it takes is for Big Joe Hart to get an injury and then, you know, a cup finals just around the corner, the Rangers game on the 2nd of January, the big European game on Thursday, more to come. I'm just not confident, maybe.
I think a lot of our view of our goalkeepers is tainted by what happened last season when we tried three and three didn't work. Mm-hmm. Again, what Brian says, Alan Morrison was great when he actually fired out some stats about Bain, and that's just not the perception that you do have of Scott Bain. I remember seeing Scott Bain at Dundee at Dens Park and going, he's a decent goalie. I really like him as a goalkeeper. I was not unhappy when we signed him, and it's really bizarre that Neil Lennon was going to sign him for Hibs, and then we nipped in and got him, and then Neil Lennon didn't fancy him a year later, which I just find utterly bizarre when you hear Neil Lennon talking now about the situation bringing in Fraser Foster. It's very difficult to sell any player unless they're at the veteran stage. You're coming in here to be the backup behind Joe Hart. I see in the comments a lot of people were saying Xander Clark, but would Xander Clark actually leave St Johnstone to sit on the bench at Celtic? Probably not. Scott Bain seems extremely comfortable. If there's a new deal on the table, then obviously the club see him as that he can contribute if ever called upon. But I would like to think that Scott Bain will be the third choice goalkeeper, and the young lad, Toby, I'm not even going to try and say his second name, the young lad Toby will be the backup goalkeeper in the foreseeable future. Moving forward, I think that's what we've got to look at. And we also need to have a look at Doohan coming back as well. Now, I talked to a guy on Twitter who goes to watch Tranmere home and away, and he raves about Doohan. He actually does rave about Doohan. He says when he comes back up, he expects Doohan to have a decent career. So maybe that's the Celtic plan as well. Bain's always going to be third choice, kicking about Lennox Town like the Lucas Zaluska character who doesn't seem to actually get a game very often, and the second choice goalkeeper is going to be between Doohan and the young Toby.
I recall on your point that Neil Lennon no fancying him, it was the Scottish Cup final 2-1 when Edouard scored the two of them, and Bain was playing the Rogers way. And I remember Lenny for the entire game was giving him, you know, he wasn't happy with his performance, was he? And you could physically see that Lenny on the sidelines wasn't happy with Bain, because Bain had obviously bought into the way that Rodgers was playing into the back and etc. And Lennon was not keen on that at all. And I remember after that game thinking to myself, I'm not quite sure he fancies Bain, which, as you say, Kev, under the circumstances was quite unusual. We've spoken about...
I said that our views of the goalkeepers are tempered from last season. When you look at our centre halves last season, none of them like showed up. None of the goalkeepers showed up. But with the confusion of which was in front of them, is it any surprise that none of them ever showed up? You look at Shane Duffy now. What version of Shane Duffy did we have up here last year?
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
It's not the Shane Duffy that's playing for Brighton just now.
No.
So I'm willing to give Bain a second chance. Because last year it was just an absolute write-off. Barkas, as I've actually said, is he's just in the wrong movie now. This move has just not worked out for him. And for the sake of the man himself, he's got to move and find another club.
Yeah, I think another example of that we've mentioned a couple of times is Ryan Christie. You know, he showed in the few games he played under Ange that he was a different proposition entirely compared to last season. But last season was a breakthrough for David Turnbull. Now, I'm bringing him up because Kevin earlier on, Brian, spoke about the ability for James Forrest to finish. David Turnbull is undoubtedly one of the best strikers of a ball at Celtic Park. We've seen it from distance. We've seen it from free kicks, corner kicks. But there's been a couple of occasions recently where the ball's dropped to him, and I don't know if it's panic, the old nosebleed, and he's just skied it. And the first one was against Livingston after the penalty kick miss, and he got another chance in the box, and it went high and wide. Same thing happened at the weekend. 3-4 minutes into the game, he scores that goal, it completely opens up. But I'm looking at the football that he's played, probably the most football he's ever played in his senior career. And I'm wondering if the return of Tommy Rogic is going to have a similar effect on him as Forrest has had on Abada, for example. Give maybe Turnbull a wee rest, bring him back out, recharge the batteries and put him back in. Do you think we're at that stage with David Turnbull at the moment?
Possibly. It's hard to say with David Turnbull. I'm a big fan of his. I think he's an excellent footballer, but he's kind of consistently inconsistent, right? Because there's times where he's tracking back, he's winning the ball back, he's making things happen. He's having shots for 20 yards and burying them and looks a world-class player. And then there's times where he's kind of lost, he's taking too long to pass. It's almost like, you know, some players are better when they don't think about it. They just instinctively strike the ball. If they've not got too much time to think, they're better. He's almost better when he's got a bit of time to sort of have a bit of space, pick his pass, you know, take his shot. And sometimes when he arrives in the box late, sometimes it's like there is that wee bit of panic and he almost tries to pause for thought and skies it. So I think a rest would be good. I think just given, as you say, the volume of games as well. What's interesting is we're talking about if Rogic comes in, Turnbull drops out, which probably means we're saying near Beaton and McGregor and Rogic would be the three. And what a change around that is for is Kev hates him being called Big Nero. Got to come in there and sort of, because at the moment he's been doing pretty well, and you feel like if someone's going to drop out, it's probably going to be Turnbull.
I think that does lead us on nicely to Nero, because again, through the prism of this season, if you were to look at it in isolation, maybe less than Midtjylland game, where he let himself down, and his performances since then when he's come in have been pretty solid. I think up at Pittodrie, which again, you know, at the moment we're looking at that as almost like a turning point of the season. I thought he played pretty well. He probably should have done better with a goal. He probably should have won that header. When you look at Near Beaton versus Lewis Ferguson, he should be winning that ball. But other than that, I thought he'd done well. And in the first half against St Johnstone, for me, Near Beaton was the best player on the park, Kevin. He was orchestrating a lot of the defence to attack in transitions. He's not afraid to go for a run with the ball, a la Chris Iyer, where he's making up 30, 40 yards, just dribbling the ball out of defence. And I think that what we've got in Beaton is maybe not a first choice, Kev, but certainly someone who's going to contribute a lot more than he has done in previous seasons.
You think so? The way it's looked over the last couple of weeks, that Postecoglou definitely does fancy him in that deeper role. I still think that against certain teams, he doesn't contribute too much, especially if teams don't come out. I think he's best Ferencváros away, and also the Dundee away games, he was more prominent and done a lot of good stuff. I can't really talk about Saturday night. I was otherwise engaged. The game was on in the background, so I didn't have full attention on it. I did actually think at one point my stream was just going round in circles, because any time I looked at my laptop, it just seemed to be going around the back and back to beat on and back round the centre halves. It looks like Postecoglou likes him. He is going to play tomorrow night. That goes without saying. He is going to be sitting in that number six role tomorrow night. I would like to see him do more creatively. I would like to see him do more creatively, especially against teams who sit in. But that's not the type of player that he actually is. When you're talking about David Turnbull, David Turnbull's created 10 big chances this season for Celtic, and he's had 6 assists, two assists in Europe, and he's also scored 4 goals. Yes, he's been inconsistent, but there is figures there, stats there that back up why he's actually in the side. We beat on a lot of it as unseen work, and you only need to go back to the Livingston game to see how frustrated we actually were when you're beat on that side. Yeah. He actually contributed nothing in that game whatsoever. So He's never going to be my favourite player. He is a player that I think Ange Postecoglou will be looking to upgrade. But again, a bit like Scott Bain, he's probably good to be hanging about in the squad for games that we actually do need.
Wealth of experience as well. And of course, when Welsh gets elbowed by Rooney and has to go off, Beaton ends up going back and deputising at centre-half again, which, you know, we're not entirely happy about. But he's got that adaptability as well. He's got that in his locker. Donnyboy67, who is a long-time commenter on these streams, comes in to tell us that his mental health's taken an upward turn today. Thank you all. Well, it's always good to get in about the Celtic chat, and hopefully it does put you on an upward turn today. And as we move through the week, Donny Boy, and your support is always, always appreciated. That's for sure. Now, you mentioned tomorrow night, Kev. Big game tomorrow night. I was looking at the table there. It's one of these games that I don't think anyone really thought Celtic would get anything out of. But we've been on a really, really good run of form. We're in the best position we possibly could be going into that game. And every game this season, away from home in Europe, I have not made a prediction for the score, but my prediction has been Celtic will score first. So I want to hear from you, Brian. What's your thoughts on tomorrow night? Any changes that we're going to be making? Any tweaks in the side? And how do you see the game going?
I would like to see Forrest starting. As I say, maybe get a bad arrest. I think Forrest will go that experience away. Look, it's going to be you're playing Leverkusen in Germany. It's going to be a hard game. But I know Celtic were getting rinsed a bit after getting beat 4-0 against Leverkusen, but it definitely didn't tell the story of the game. I've got some stats for you. I know this is Kev's thing usually.
Somebody bought Kev a whiteboard at some stage in the last few months. I mean, coming out with all these stats.
But, we had 85% possession, passing success to their 83. We had 55% possession. We had the same number of shots, 18, as Leverkusen in that game. We were keeping 7 saves to make to their 6, and yet we could beat 4-0. It was individual errors and players not taking chances. Now, Postecoglou mentioned the other day how much better the squad is. You know, in that game, Kyle would have been out for his first game back. I think McGregor had been missing. These guys are in great form now, and these are the difference makers. I'm not fearing Grover there. I still think it's a really hard game. But Big Tony the other day made a really good point. And he said that Celtic felt more resilient. He didn't really fear Celtic were going to lose. And I feel that getting into this game, I just think, could we get a result? Definitely. It's going to be hard, of course, but we've got the ability to do it. We're in better form than we were last time. It's all we played for. And I think if we can get a draw, it doesn't matter what Betis do. I think as long as we get something, we can take it back to Parkhead. I may be wrong in that, I'm sure I'll get corrected. But I'm really excited about it. And I don't fear any teams now, although with the understanding it's going to be a very hard game.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I was quite critical after that game, Brian, about Celtic's performance. But I think with hindsight, you look back at the thing as a whole, you covered it for us, didn't you, Kev? You were on the panel for the post-match straight after that game. And like you say, I think a draw away from home would be an excellent result tomorrow night. I don't expect any more than that, Kev. I still have the same concerns as most people about the playing about at the back and maybe losing that. But I do think that when we go out there and we score first, you know, anything can happen. And I know it didn't work out against Betis. But I just, you know, we've spoken about a couple of guys who could be the scorer of that all important opening goal, and the likes of Jamesy Forrest. Do you start Forrest tomorrow night?
I would start Forrest tomorrow night. Just think of some of the goals that he has scored in Europe. The most recent ones in Rome, an absolute peach. Everybody talks about N-Cham's winner, but Jamesy Forrest's goal was an utter peach. You start, you're talking about experience, you start Forrest, you start McGregor, you start Beaton as well, and you hope that especially Beaton doesn't take a rush of blood to the head and pick up an early booking and then his own eggshells for the remainder of the game. I mean, I found it interesting. This has been a very good week for Ange. He's done a couple of interviews. He's had the Christmas advert, and he looks good in his big Christmas jumper. And I mean, it was very, very heartfelt, family-based, the Christmas advert this year. But what he's actually says was the Leverkusen and the Betis games were the two games where the team really bought into him. And as you say, Paul, one of them was a 4-0 defeat. I done the post-match, and it was very difficult to put any to colour in anything on a 4-0 defeat. That is, it's a 4-0 defeat. But we did have chances in that game, but we were completely naive against a very, very good pressing side. So it'll be interesting again to see if we make Leverkusen work for whatever they want. Whatever Leverkusen get out of this game, I want them to work for it. Whatever we get out of game, I just want us to come off this park and we've seen progress for what we were 6-7 weeks ago against a quality opposition, against one of the best teams that we'll face this season. Let's see how far we've actually come, because even that night against Leverkusen, we were still a bit harum scarum. We were still very the rock and roll football. Our interpretation of Ange Postecoglou's football was still not in place that night. But we created 4 or 5 great chances. We now seem a lot more controlled, a lot more unexcitable, and we seem to have a knowledge of what we're trying to do now. So it'll be interesting going to the toughest away game that we've got left in Europe this season, apart from after Christmas, of course, to see how far we've actually come. I want a decent performance, a lot of positives. If we get that, then the result will be what the result will be. The result will take care of itself. But how good will it be? How good would it be to go into the final home game if we get something against Betis? We could actually reach the last 32 of the Europa League. That seemed beyond us at the start of August when we scraped through against AZ Alkmaar.
It certainly did. And David Kelly actually makes a really good point about one of the earlier discussion points on David Turnbull removing his own bias on Turnbull. He was improved his game, but still hides in the harder games. He has a role at Celtic, but if he wants to improve, he will need replaced in this system. McGrory asks an interesting question. When does a player stop being only in certain age? I don't know. 24, 25, I would say.
I mean, I was going to say David Turnbull's only 22. And he's played under 60 games for Celtic. So you look at James Forrest, somebody mentioned in the comments as well, I think it was Strangelove the Doctor, about James Forrest. He never really had a decent game against Rangers until Rodgers came up. And maybe David Turnbull's just needing one big game and against one of the better sides for him to crack on. I thought he was a man of the match in Budapest. I thought he was fantastic in Budapest. So tomorrow night, hopefully he bosses it.
Could be the night, absolutely. Now, thank you everybody for getting involved in the comment section. We are going out live on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, LinkedIn, and of course, back on Twitter. If you're on YouTube, get subscribing, click the notifications bell. If you want some Christmas gifts for another Celtic supporter, have a look at axon.net. We've got hoops, we've got shamrock tops, and a couple of tracksuits will be joining them at some stage in the next week or so. And that also helps build the channel. We have the Axon Weekender, the charity weekender, the award-winning charity weekender. It's coming back on the 4th and 5th. Have a look at the social media to see who is going to be involved in that. There's going to be collaborations with other Celtic platforms. There's going to be pre-recorded content. There's going to be Axon only content. It's going to be a fantastic weekend where we'll be raising cash, and the recipient of that cash will be announced very shortly as well, just to get that confirmed with them. So thanks everybody for getting involved. Thanks for supporting Axon, and thank you to Kevin Graham and Brian Degnan for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for.
Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.